Hello, Mustang fans, and welcome to another Ford Performance Edition of the Mustang Owners Podcast. I'm your host, John Clore. You know, from my years with Auto Week magazine, the Ford Special Vehicle Team, Ford Racing, and now Ford Performance, I've always known that everyone has a Mustang story. So to that end, I hope you are reading my efforts to tell your story in the enthusiast section of FordPerformance.com, as well as keeping up with the latest happenings in the Mustang hobby by checking out FordPerformanceClubConnect.com every week. My co-host is a Mustang hobby and industry insider who is perhaps best known as the longtime president of the Mustang Owners Club of Southeastern Michigan, or MOXM, one of the largest and most active Mustang clubs on the continent, plus who also heads up BOXM for you Bronco owners, as well as being the new leader behind the International Council of Mustang Clubs. Of course, I can only be talking about my great friend Mike Ray. Mike, tonight, an SVT and Ford Racing superstar somehow got cornered onto Mustang Owners Podcast. How did you do it?
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun tonight. If you've been around Mustang and you've been deeply indulged, you'll know who he is. And his cool stories are unmatched, in my opinion.
Well, they are. And that's why we want to welcome none other than Jesse Kershaw to the Mustang Owners Podcast. Jesse, thanks for spending some time with us tonight. Boy, do we have stories to tell.
Guys, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I'm looking forward to see where this goes.
Well, I'm going to be the first to just throw this out there. I met Jesse during my time with the Ford Special Vehicle Team. I started SVT for the 1995 Cobra R launch. And then I disappeared for a year or two. But when I came back, Jesse, you were running the info center and you were doing crazy things. And you were so involved with guys who not just bought Cobras and Lightnings and went out and drove them around, but guys who raced them, that I knew sooner or later, after our days at SVT came to an end, you would wind up doing something on the competition. And sure enough, after we got disbanded, you wound up at Ford Racing, as I did. I was doing the communications and the website, but you were doing the racing part stuff. And lo and behold, Mike, it was something he just parlayed into becoming the performance parts segment manager, the drag racing parts and competition manager. And anybody that raced anything, if you didn't know Jesse, you didn't get squat from Ford Racing.
That is correct.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, you guys make it sound like I was more of a gatekeeper than I was, but I did have the luxury and the trust of certain managers that really put a lot of faith in me and let me manage, our engagement with Sportsman Racers in particular. And we did have a budget for product placement. And I'm not going to share with you what it was, but I bet you think it was a lot more than it was, because I really, on the rare occasion, I would tell someone what our budget was, they would be shocked because they'd say, well, we see it everywhere. And, I worked really hard at that. And a lot of times that was a lot of, just grit, honestly. And, it's also, I think you have to develop a rapport with racers and you have to help. And not only just racers, we did product placement with other things, I'm going to get off on a little tangent here, but at one point, there was a regional fleet manager for California, and his name is like right on the tip of my tongue, is Bob, I want to say Scardelli or Scaradelli or something like that. I can't remember now. And he contacted us because a big fleet customer of his wanted to build a car. It was tangential to racing. He wanted to build a car for the Amber Award, America's Most Beautiful Roadster, at the Grand National Roadster Show. And he said, this is a top customer of ours. He buys literally thousands of cars, and he just wants someone to help him win this Amber Award with a Ford engine and a Ford. And I said, well, somehow this got to me, right? Like, this goes through the whole chain of Ford. And at the buck, I guess, stopped at my desk. And they said, you have to help this guy because he buys 5,000 Fords and he wants a Ford engine. He didn't even want it for free. He just wanted someone to help him make it work and win this award. And so next time I went out there for a race, I drove like 2.5 hours north with Wayne Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. And we visited this roadster shop, and I threw so many ideas at the guy. I think his head was spinning, and I think the shop owner was just grinning because he just saw dollar signs of all the work that he was going to do for this guy. and he went and won America's Most Beautiful Roadster and bought another 5,000 cars. You know what I mean? So it was a worthwhile road trip.
Well, if there's anybody who recognizes that, it's Mike Ray, because what you did, Jesse, you understood, and you know how many managers we had. In my tenure at Ford Racing, when we were there, what, 10 years or so, we had like four or five different bosses, and some of them were really good and some were just difficult. And the difference, I think, what makes you different and what makes Mike different is if you stay connected to the people on the ground, if you're grassroots connected, the other part, that the rest of that all comes easy because you can explain to the managers why something will work. And also, because you're connected on the business side, because Mike went to all those big events, he worked with Roush, he worked with Celine, you know, and you were on that side of it. So you, when you work both sides of the fence, the managers don't have that on the ground, boots on the ground experience on both ends. So you, Jesse, brought the kind of perspective that only guys like you and Mike can really do for managers.
Well, you know, I think there's, and Mike, I know you're, I mean, obviously you are as passionate as they come. I mean, you are an enthusiast, you lead these enthusiast groups. But you know, I, and John, this might surprise you, but I used to read a lot of articles and books about management style. I was really intrigued with certain management and how they handled things. And, you know, you talked about some of our managers and we don't need to go down the path. And we had some good ones like Brian Wolf, and we had some not so great ones. That made life difficult, but you know, there was always a phrase I like to use, and it was CEO. Always try to be the CEO, and that means customers first, employees second, and then the company will be taken care of if you take care of the first two, right? So that was sort of my philosophy, was make the customer satisfied, keep your employees happy, and the company will be taken care of if you handle those first two things. And so I sort of saw myself as a shepherd of the brand. You know, I mean, Ford was going to be there long after me. Ford was there way before me. You know, my job was just to shepherd it as best as I could and leave people with the best impression of Ford Motor Company and of Mustang. Because Mustang was, let's be honest, was the majority of what we did. We obviously did other stuff too, but Mustang was the vast majority. And, you know, and that's what I tried to do, is just shepherd the brand and leave a good feeling with everybody.
Well, it was more than that, because Mike, when you... got, especially when Jesse was so, I mean, 100% into the Cobra Jet program, when I was dealing with the enthusiast section, and Jesse was talking of the racers, when, say, back to the 2000 Cobra R came out. And Jesse, I don't know if you remember this, but I'm going to say it here on the Mustang Owners Podcast, because I love to share stuff like this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is what Jesse Kershaw was all about. He got a call. And he got a call from a racer, which we knew was racing a Cobra R, and I guess he was messed up the engine. And you know, the 2000 R, Mike, has a unique motor, and the parts were unobtainium. I guess it was head bolts. You couldn't get them anywhere. You can't buy them. So this guy was in competition. Jesse knew him, fell for him. He said, "Come on, Jesse, you got to do something for me." So one day I come into, I'm not making this up, Mike. This is true. I walk in and he says, "Clore, we're going up to the Romeo engine plant. Can you come with me?" I go, "Yeah, okay."
Why? This is actually, so I think you're, John, I'm going to interrupt you just a little bit. I think you're mixing up two stories a little bit. I did do some things for, especially in particular, for a racer with a Cobra R in Australia who went on to win like some Targa championship there.
Yep.
And I did help them a lot. But what you're talking about, the head bolts were actually the Terminator. It was Terminator.
Oh, it was a Terminator. Was a That's right.
And
Terminators
that needed new cylinder heads, right, and they couldn't get the right head bolts for them.
No one
And could. They were at risk of going into 30 days of being down, and it was going to turn into a buyback situation.
Yeah.
And then pick up from there, because I think you got the
right. That's right. It was that. And I said to him, "Well, what are we doing?" He said, "We'll just go up there." And I'd been to up to the Romeo plant to do a story about the Romeo niche line. And we knew a couple of people up there, Geronimo, and there's some guys that, you know, we knew some of the guys back on the niche plant. So check this out, Mike. We get in the car, we drive up to Romeo. He has us go somehow he gets in. I didn't have a badge to get in. We go to the back door, and one of the guys on the niche line lets us in the back door. And we walk up to the line where they're building these motors. And he says, he reaches into the box and he pulls out all these head bolts, counts them. He says, "You put these in your pockets." And I had like cargo shorts on. So my shorts, I mean, I had to tighten my belt up because my shorts were already at my knees. And I had like, I don't know how many head bolts And Jesse, we were walking back to the back because you somehow got this set up, and we're clanking and clinking. And I'm thinking, oh my God, we're going to get fired. We're walking out of Romeo with head bowls for a racer. And that's,
well, we got stopped. And they said, you can't take those. And maybe I'm embellishing here, but my recollection is I'm not leaving without them.
No,
we have customers.
That's exactly right.
I said, so you need to figure out a way to let us walk out with these. I don't even know what it was. 5 sets of head bowl, whatever it was. They were in Ziploc bags.
Yeah, no,
but I don't want people to think we just had these head bowls.
No, I mean,
They were in baggies and they were okay. They weren't like they were going to, get dinged up, but I said, well, I'm not leaving without them. So you need to figure it out.
And I just said, I just looked at the guy and I said, I don't know this guy. I'm just here because I thought we were going to go to lunch in Romeo. I had no idea. He's dragging me in here.
Little did you know I was putting you up to being an accomplice.
No, and my pants weighed 700 pounds. I'm thinking, what am I doing here? What is wrong with Kershaw?
But you know what? We sent out those head bolts and we got those cars back on the road.
And those guys
and
never
satisfied customers, right?
This is the kind of stuff that Mike Gray does. And Mike, I had to share that with you because I know once you met Jesse, I don't know if it was down at Varsity Ford or whenever you met him when they were launching the Cobra Jets, you could just tell the minute you said hello to this guy, this is how far he'll go to help people out.
Well, I first met Jesse at the Ford Performance Building back in the Joe King and Jason Chembree days. And like I said, those guys, both of them are actually too, just like Jesse, compassionate, enthusiast, car guys. They get it. They love their job. And that's what really, really made it cool and fun to work with. And that's why they were so successful. Yeah. And then follow it, obviously. Yeah. The Varsity Ford days when we went out there for that. Flat Rock when we did the pickup parties for the Cobra Jets. Just great, great, great memories.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
I want to shout out to Jason Chembree too. I'm glad you brought him up because, there's so many people, and it's not just Jason, but I do, because you brought him, I want to make mention of him specifically, that there's a lot of people who make things happen behind the scenes at Ford. And, I and John were lucky to take some glory in it because we were a face out there talking and we had a public presence. But, Chembree didn't have a huge public presence. I mean, people knew him who were close to the programs and really, knew the nitty gritty. But I don't know that the Cobra Jet would have happened without Jason Chembree.
Oh,
I mean,
really?
It seriously. Wow. Like I really feel that without his he went above and beyond in that first 08 Cobra Jet. And that car is such an interesting story about how it happened. And do you guys mind if I kind of go down that rabbit hole?
No, that's exactly why we want. Yeah, everybody knows you as Cobra Jet boy, so let's get it on.
So I prefer Cobra Jet Man, but so what happened is we had this racing program, the FR500S. I don't know if you guys remember that.
Yeah.
And they built 75 cars, and it was a spec series based off the S197 Mustang, 3-valve manual transmission GT, and it was on the heels of the FR500C Mustangs. It was supposed to be a spec series, kind of feeder series to Grand Am for road racing.
Right.
And they built 75 cars, and we only sold about 35 of them. It was not a great deal. And I was I was coming back from the first race at Road Atlanta with Leo Capaldi, And I said to Leo, I go, I don't understand. I mean, the racers seem happy with the cars and everyone seems, you know, to really love them. Why are we having trouble selling these other half, the second half of the cars? And he said, well, you should be really happy. I mean, you had great numbers. I go, yeah, but we're supposed to have 75. And he said, well, no spec series in the history of spec series racings had more than 20. And I was like, what? You know? So now we've got these 75 cars. And I said, well, why didn't you tell someone that 75 was too much? And he said, well, no one ever asked. You know? And I was sort of on the periphery of it. I was down there to, you know, to wine and dine some journalists and help out. But I wasn't knee deep in the program like I was in the drag racing stuff. So I at no point did someone ask me how many I thought they should build. I just assumed that they did the research and that was it, you know. But anyway, they had 75. They only sold, I think, 38. And so then we had 37 left that we ended up selling to Miller Motorsports Park at School Cars. And kind of taking a bath on. But in between that time, before they knew that we weren't going to be able to sell this many cars, they had already ordered 50 bodies to do 50 more road race cars. And I was like, immediately was like, let's do a drag race car. And I had been beaten up doing a drag race car ever since my SVT days. I was trying to get Tom Bohenek to put a solid axle in a Terminator and let me go do wheel stands and burnouts at every NMRA race. You know what I mean? So I had been beating this idea around for several years of FR500D or whatever you want to call it. Eventually, I got to the idea of calling it Cobra Jet because Roger Pullman, who worked out at, who was one of our employees at the Ford Racing Parts Warehouse, was a passionate guy. He had one of the original 50 lightweight cars. And he said, hey, could you help me, get NHRA to do something with the original 50 cars for the 50th or for the 40th anniversary and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, tell me more about this. And really, it was him that made me decide to change the what was my PowerPoint from FR500D to Cobra Jet. And so anyway, I see this. We have 50 bodies that we've already ordered. We've already committed to. We're not going to build more road race cars. So I see this window of opportunity to get in. And I start twisting the PowerPoint uses many of the components that would have been left over from the road race program as possible. So it actually was going to be, I took out what was going to be the supercharged 5.4 and made it a three valve 4.6 because I thought that was the only way I'd be able to get it approved because those are parts we had on the shelf. Well, I don't even know this, but Brian Wolf is talking to our director at the same time saying, you know, hey, you guys need to do a drag car. I don't think he called it Cobra Jet specifically, but he's like, you need to do a drag car. You need to do like a version of the GT, blah, 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 blah. Well, Wolf had talked to me about several things. I actually helped him with some of his drag racing stuff, but somehow we just hadn't all connected. And then it kind of all connected that, oh, wait a minute, you guys are talking to Wolf about this over here. I sent him my PowerPoint and said, hey, what do you think about this? I just want your feedback. You're a director. You're not at Ford Racing. We didn't even know he was coming over there at this point.
We had no idea he was coming.
Yeah, right? No idea. And so I sent him the PowerPoint. I just said, hey, can you look at this and give me some tips? And he shoots me a note. I mean, John, you know how it is. A director, if they get back to you at all, it could be days. Within 10 minutes, he had read it and sent me a note and said, you'll be getting a meeting notice soon. All of a sudden, Jamie Allison is at my desk. What did you send Brian Wolf? I was like, well, you know, I sent him this PowerPoint, you know, and I've showed it to you. I revise it every 6 months for the last 3 years. You know, I keep, you know, trying to churn away at it to get a bite. And he's like, well, Brian's really hot on it. Now you got to bring me up to speed. We got to do this. So anyway, we go on a meeting. It's in Brian's office. Andy Slankard was there. Rob Dunawith, Jimmy Ronzello, Jamie, myself, Brian. I think that's it, but Larry Farron was there, and you know, we're looking through the PowerPoint and Brian's like, you know, this three valve doesn't make sense and you're gonna have to spend a lot of money getting it to really go fast and high revving, and why not just use the GT500 engine and it'll be so much cheaper and easier. Now mind you, that my original proposal was GT500. I only took it out because I didn't think I could get it approved,
right.
and Brian's like, it's ridiculous to do that. You guys need to use GT500. And Andy looks at me and he's like, are you okay with that? And I thought, you know, if I would have said no, he would have fought for it. But I couldn't keep the grin off my face because I was like, somehow I got what I wanted without even having to fight about it. You know, like it was somebody else's idea. Oh, so we ended up kicking off the 5.4 in it, the supercharged 5.4. And it was it was intended to be a mad dash, but there were people kind of dragging their feet. And it was like, well, we're just going to say that we tried. And if we don't make it, that's okay. Cause it's a tight timeline and, you know, they're going to switch over to the newer edge body style pretty soon. And if we can't get it done, that's okay. And we'll just tell them we tried our best and Brian Wolf will be pacified and we won't have to worry about it. And then, as you know, John, Brian became our director. Right. And he had told me a day or two before, he said, keep it under your hat, but I'm coming over there to be director.
And the next time, Jesse, when you were the head of Ford Racing, if you liked road racing and you did a good job, they let you build road race cars. And Brian is a drag racer, so he became the director. And guess what? He got to build a drag race car. That's how it works.
And I can tell you, when it was announced he was coming in, I was looking around the conference room. You know, the big conference room where we'd have the big, like, you know, Wednesday meeting.
Oh, yeah.
I looked around the conference room. And you can bleep this part out, but when I looked, I saw a lot of faces that were like, because now he's going to make us do this. Like, we will get this done.
Well, yeah. You wanted it.
And bringing it full circle, because we were on such a tight timeline and we were committed to, you know, delivering at least a couple of those cars at the end of 08, so we could technically call them an 08 Cobra Jet. And those were Brent Hayek's four cars. We delivered them from Roush in December of 08. Jason Shembri was instrumental in that. I mean, honestly, without him, I don't know that we could have done it. And I mean that sincerely. He was a big part of the spark that just chasing suppliers down and working crazy hours and just going above and beyond. And that's not to take anything away from anybody else, but definitely, I mean, if there's ever a Cobra Jet book that talks about, you know, the later model Cobra Jets, he definitely needs to.
Well, I'm glad
that's a hint to you there, Clark.
Well, no, Mike, I got to tell you, Mike, you know the Shembri as well, but I got to tell you this, that for us on the marketing side, it was so important that car got done in 08 because the 68 Winter Nationals where Cobra Jets were born. You know how we always love to tie Mustang stuff to anniversaries. And if we didn't have an 08, it wasn't going to work. And to be honest with you, setting this all up, working with Mickey Madness, who was my manager, trying to get the PR and the marketing behind the Cobra Jet, the thing, Mike, that scared me was, is this thing going to be competitive? Because we all know Al Joniak, you know, remember that interview you and I did, Mike, with him at Carlisle?
Yeah.
The original Cobra Jets they're legendary. And I thought, if this thing goes out in the NHRA and we don't do well, I know Hijack, Brett was great, but I didn't know. I was hoping this car, that Jesse and Wolf and Shembri had a car that could compete. And boy,
honestly, John, it was almost too fast. It was like we were so fast out of the, you know, because NHRA is about horsepower to weight, you know. Yep. And it was so fast. I remember we were at the track testing, and I said something to Dev Saberwall, like, we may have to slow this car down, and he melted down on me. You keep telling me it's got to be fast and you want more horsepower, and now you say this and blah 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 blah. And so I just let him scream at me for a couple minutes, and then I called him about 4 hours later and said, hey, are you okay? He was like, yeah, I'm really sorry I yelled at you. And I'm like, listen, man, I get it. Like, we're pressuring you, we're on a timeline, we're all over you to get it. I said, you know, we just have to make sure that the car as delivered has headroom to grow and get faster over time, and maybe doesn't have everything delivered right at the initial delivery, because we do have to play this game, right? Like, I mean, balance of power racing is as much about the negotiation as it is about the hardware, frankly. Like, making the fastest car in the world isn't going to do you any good if it's rated as the fastest car in the world. What you want is a car that's like the third fastest car in the world, but it's rated like the 10th fastest car in the world. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Like,
and that's where you find success.
That's the game. It was no surprise to me when you finally wound up, I forgot when it was, when you went to become working with NHRA as a program manager, because you know that's a political game, and what the product you guys put out with the original Cobra Jet had to get better, and racers that, I was just stunned, Jesse, and I don't know, Mike, remember when we went to Varsity just to see these cars being picked up, that I didn't think they could sell 50 of these. I didn't know there were that many drag racers left. How did you move that sheet metal, Jesse?
So, you know, so that's an interesting story. We had, after Jamie had agreed to, with Brian to or let us go out and solicit customers for it, he came to me and he wanted it. And, you know, I wish I could probably dig up the letter somewhere, but he was very cautious. He, you know, he was always hedging his bets that it could still be canceled, right? And so he's like, well, don't commit. We're going to do it. Say we might do it and don't give too much information and don't promise anything. I mean, it was just like, it was like legalese. The whole letter we sent out to the dealers was like this, maybe, sort of, kind of, if you do, we'll see, you know. And we sent it out to the dealers. And obviously, you know, we had been beating the bushes and I, you know, had dealers that we worked with closely and knew and customers we worked with closely and knew. And we sent out this sort of maybe kind of we might do this letter. Do you want to give us some money? And within 2 days, we had 45 orders.
So it wasn't like the 70, the track cars. You kind of knew what the market was. Right off.
Yeah, we knew what the market was, and we knew, I think, and, you know, and obviously Brett helped that a ton because, you know, we knew Brett Hayek, and he bought the first 10. He, I know he raced the first four. We delivered him the first four. He hooked up with John Calvert, which is a whole nother story I could tell you because I was kind of there when those two hooked up, and I inadvertently put them together, But yeah, you know, so he obviously helped. When somebody, you have one dealer who buys 10 cars and you're only trying to sell 50, 20% is taken care of in one fell swoop. But we got to 45 in 48 hours, and then we had the rest of the five sold by the end of the week. And what was really funny is, you know, Dan Davis, you know, he didn't have any love for me. You know, he had sort of his inner circle and I wasn't part of it. I wasn't, you know, what I'm talking about, John. And
you were on the ground and he was at that level above there and they didn't like to get their hands dirty.
Yeah. He was a white shirt and I was a black shirt at the track. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
and you had grease on your hands.
Yeah. And what I mean by white and black shirt is the white shirt guys never went to the starting line because you get rubber all over your shirt. Yep. And the black shirt guys would go to the starting line because
you can't see it. Well, I wore for different reason. You wore it for the rubber. I wore it so you didn't see the mustard and ketchup that spilled on my belly.
There you go. So anyway, Dan Davis, the only time, I think I worked for him for 4 years, the only time he came to my cube, he goes, I hear you want to sell these drag cars. And I said, yeah. And he goes, you'll be lucky if you sell four. And I said, okay, we'll see. And that was that. And obviously, after the end of the week, we had 50 orders and you know, the rest. And then he was, you know, Dan moved on and Brian came in. And but, you know, I'm telling a little bit where the bodies are buried here. But about 3 years later, Dan came to see me and some other people at the track. He had retired, you know, and he was there with someone and he's telling them how it was his idea.
We met Dan at Carlisle. He wants to be on the podcast. We're going to have to pull him into that one because how many times, and you can ask Mike when he was over on the Mustang team at the JWT buildings, and he would say something. You could always tell you had a good idea when you thought it was great. You lived and died with it. And then about 6 months later, somebody else took credit for it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I can tell you, like, Dan wasn't on board at first, but after 3 years of success, it was, I mean, it was his.
Usually the way it works out, huh, Jeff?
Success has many fathers, but failure is an orphan. No, that's
you know what I want to say. I wanted to share, John, is one of my favorite mementos, Cobra Jet wise, is when I sold Jason Shembry his Tremor Ranger, he brought me a souvenir that we all signed. I don't know what year it was, but it was at Flat Rock. Remember, we all signed the hoods and everything else. And
oh yeah, yeah.
Like a banner we signed. Well, he had a picture of it, of everybody's signature on it. So it wasn't the true signatures on it, but he gave me like a replicated picture of all the signatures on the Cobra Jet. And I still actually have that. And that's one of the treasured mementos I have for Cobra Jet program.
Well, Kershaw, you have to have quite a bit. I mean, we see, I didn't know that Jason Shembry, you know, we still deal with his brother, Jeff, over at Oval Auto, but I didn't know he had that big a role. We know your efforts because, you know, you were always at those meetings and we know your heart was in it, and you're that same kind of Mike Ray lead follower, get out of the way.
I really think that, I mean, I don't think I would have been able to do the car without Brian Wolf. you know, and I would like to think that Brian would say that he wouldn't have been able to do the car the first year without me. I would like to think that there's a symbiotic relationship there. And I would argue that neither of us could have done the car the first year without Jason, because it, I mean, we really were on, we were on such a tight crunch. I mean, I don't think people realize how quick the program came together the first year. You know, Wolf came over as director, I think, in June, and we delivered cars in December, you know? So, I mean, this was really a Herculean effort, but you know, we had a lot of people who wanted to do it. And even NHRA wanted to do it. You know, I gotta tell you, Bruce Botchelder was my guy at NHRA Tech for the first several years. And, you know, he came up to look at the car, and he's, you know, he was, I mean, Bruce was like a year younger than God then, you know? And he came up and looked at the car, and I'm just this whippersnapper. And we, then he's like, I'd like, you know, let's go to dinner and talk about it. I like Italian. So we took him to, we took him out to Italian dinner, and Ronzello was there with me, and we're talking about the blower. And I gotta believe he said this as like a gimme to Ford, like just to get us in the door, like, hey, we're gonna give this to you because we want you here, right? And he said, well, you know, I mean, the engine's only 330 cubic inches. It's not like it's that big. I mean, it's got a blower on it, but how much is that good for, right? And Ronzello and I look at each other like, oh, my God.
This is going to be great. No,
they're going to let us rate this thing at like 10 horsepower. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you know, Jesse, that at the time, you know, drag racing was considered, you know, they were looking at John Force sideways. You know, it was considered not where the market was moving, and to have the have Ford back in NHRA, especially around the name Cobra Jet. I mean, the history behind that car, it was just timing was everything. And I don't know if people listening to us tonight really understand how difficult. I mean, we were a bunch of crazy people, not just SVT but Ford Racing as well. And then when you have these dreams and you have the passion, you're right. There are people at Ford who just have this drive. And Jesse, without that, you know darn well there'd be many of the other people would say, we almost did this and we almost did that, but you really wouldn't see any of this stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a function of just any big corporation, you know, and any, especially a big corporation that has a lot of history. You know, you end up having a lot of bureaucracy, and you have people who, instead of looking for the 100 reasons we should do something, they'll look for the one reason not to. And because it's safe, right? Like it's in. And so, you know, I did my best work during the economic downturn because I was willing to stick my neck out. And I didn't, I mean, if they fired me for trying, then I was like, well, then I don't want to be here. And exactly. So I stuck my neck out a lot, and I had a lot of success during that time because other people were more than willing to let me stick my neck out, basically. They're like, well, I'm not going to stick my neck out, but you don't want to do it first of all. You know what I mean? Like,
hey, Mikey, he likes it.
It's like somebody has to do something because the business is going down.
Well, that's exactly.
They're like, well, we're going to let you be the canary in the coal mine, you know? Like, and then when things got better, there wasn't as much of an appetite for judicious risk taking. You know, it was like, well, things are good. Let's not rock the boat, you know? But at the time in 2009, 2010, 2011, you know, we had to do something. We couldn't just sit idle. And so when you have a number of people who are kind of bureaucratic and they don't want to do something and they're like, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? And I'm like, hey, I think we should do X, Y, and Z. And they're like, OK, knock yourself out, you know.
I think
it was a perfect timing. It was perfect timing.
It was. And Mike, you know darn well when you I know many stories about you sticking your neck out, especially on some marketing things that you knew were right. And nobody wants to say anything, but Mike, so you said it. And before you knew it, you were working on Super Duty. No, I mean, that's how it works. And Jesse, I have to tell you that the guys within not just the SVT, but the Ford Racing guys, when we mention your name, the number one thing is your passion. And you're infectious. You had that wit, but you were one of the few people we can say, every freaking meeting you had ideas. And that's, it reminds me so much of Mike. You know, you get all these ideas and ideas. Now, a lot of them, Jesse, no, they're pie in the sky. I mean, I got to tell you, but you pulled off some miracles, and I was just so happy you were able to spend some time and tell our audience here on the Mustang Owners Podcast that inside story of the Cobra Jet. That's how this stuff happens. And what a godsend that we had a chance to work together. How much fun that was. And I know now you're into real estate, you're doing other things, but I'm just so proud of what you did with Ford, and it's just a pleasure. Mike, I don't know how you dug him out. I don't know how you pulled him away, but Jesse's...
Where would you hear that story? Where would you ever hear that?
No one will, because Jesse, thank you for all the efforts you did on behalf of the company. I mean, I'm still hanging in there at Ford Performance, but you made it. It's guys like you that keeps me going.
Well, thanks, John. And Mike, thanks for having me on. And you know, yeah, it's fun. It's fun to remember some of this stuff. In all honesty, you know, it's, like I said, my kids have no idea. They don't care. It's like, you know, but yeah, it's fun. It's fun. And I'm, you know, especially PRI was this last week, you know, and I looked at, you know, it's what I really like is seeing a lot of people that I worked with very closely being so successful in the industry now. I mean, obviously you guys are killing it. You're number one podcast. And to see so many other people like Mike Galimi, you know, he's over at Hot Rod now and what he's doing there. And just, you know, it's really great to see all the success people are having in the industry.
Well, thank you, Jesse, so much for taking the time out of your schedule. Mike, thank you for grabbing them. This is great stuff. We hope you, ladies and gentlemen, have listened and intently on these wonderful stories we have on the backside, the inside story of how some of our greatest and most wonderful Mustangs got built. Our thanks again. Jesse Kershaw, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, and I hope everyone enjoyed that because, you know, that's what we do here on the Mustang Owners Podcast. So until next time, we're just going to have to catch you down the road.